Well, hey, everyone. We are opening up this week's culture segment, and it's very fun when we get to invite you to get to know a new guest here at The Boundless Show. And today we have in studio Brian Ivey. Hey.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
Doing very well. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
I met you 2 years ago.
Yes, ma'am.
And then I'm sure you promptly forgot me, but whatever. Here you are back, and you're obligated to chat with me for this time. So
very obligated.
Oh, very fun. Well, we have got coming out like... basically as we speak or within the next day or so, what we here at Focus, and quite frankly you, because you created this thing, are calling the Dropbox. This is, many of you saw or have seen Irreplaceable, the film that we released, it was a year and a half ago now probably, and did the follow-up curriculum of the Family Project with that. Well, we call that our reclamation series. Next up in the series is this little film called The Dropbox that Brian actually created with a small gaggle-ish team that found themselves,
good adjective,
found themselves over in South Korea. Crazy story. So obviously we're going to be giving you the info about actually seeing this film. That is just beside the point with what we're going to be talking about. In light of that, Brian has his own story to tell in conjunction with even creating this whole crazy thing, which is actually captured in a book, which is a memoirish type book.
Yes, very much
so. Now, that's two ish words that I used. Memoirish book called The Dropbox, How 500 Abandoned Babies, An Act of Compassion, and a Movie Changed My Life Forever. So this is going to be fun because I had a fun time reading it and getting to know you a little bit through the book.
For sure.
And I want to start off by just talking about, you really open up the book talking about your childhood, and it's really from page one that you discuss your love of film, and so we don't have this turning point in your life where all of a sudden you decide you like movies. Do you remember the first movie you ever saw?
The first movie I ever saw, I probably don't, but the first movie that really counted for me was a movie called The Great Escape.
Oh, I don't even know about that one.
Yeah, 1963, Steve McQueen jumped over the barbed wire fence on his own motorcycle.
Yeah.
And I realized you could tell a war story without any blood.
Okay.
And it got into my bones. And so since the early days, I wanted to make movies because I wanted to go on an adventure with my friends. That's really what it was about to me.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because in you telling this story of your escapades as a young filmmaker, and by young, I mean like, what, like 10 years old, like when you started some of these things, it kind of reminded me of, I felt like I was watching The Outsiders or I was watching Super 8 or something, you know, hopefully without as much turmoil as as those films included. But it was fun to see that it was you, and kind of it almost depicted an idyllic upbringing in the OC, you know, in California where you were, running around in neighborhoods. Your dad kind of got involved a little bit, as much as he had to.
Yes, he did.
And so that was kind of fun to see. Now you did, because you do ultimately in this book, talk about, coming to a point of faith. You had, you grew up Catholic, right?
Yes.
Or at least nominally.
Very decoratively.
Okay, decoratively Catholic, although you did say that you put in a little more effort than your brother. You were kind of trying.
My brother came up to my dad when he was 18 and said, Dad, I can make my own decisions now. I'm an adult, and I'm not going to go to church anymore. And so I felt the same way, but didn't want to say it. And so I kind of carried on the tradition and carried on the culture of Catholicism in my house. But it could have been anything. It could have been a Baptist, could have been a Lutheran. Didn't really matter. It was really just something that I did because my dad did it, just like he did it because his dad did it. And I think that's a lot of people until you understand how this story of God, this great redemption story, actually includes you.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, you kind of, you know, alluded in the book that you had created, films in general and filmmaking specifically as a god, and that's kind of what was directing your life. And of course, there's a whole world I don't even know about, all the snobbery that goes on among filmmakers.
So
I don't even understand, because like the films that I like are ones that no one ever critically acclaims, you know. So I'm like, except for Chariots of Fire, that's kind of the one that I pull out there.
That's a good film.
I know, it's a tearjerker.
It is.
There's always tears with that. But let's talk about that pivotal moment when you are sitting in a breakfast nook reading the newspaper and you stumble upon a story. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yep. It was June 20th, 2011. I was eating cereal in my parents' breakfast nook, looking out onto my charming life. And I read an article in the Los Angeles Times called South Korean Pastor Tends an Unwanted Flock. And it was all about this pastor in Korea who had built a depository for abandoned babies. And not just abandoned babies, but also babies with disabilities and deformities. So in some ways, it was a bin. Mm-hmm. It was a place to leave children that people couldn't take care of because it was too difficult, or kids they didn't want to take care of. And so immediately I had this reaction of, why does this exist? What does it say about me? What does it say about us? Why should something like this need to exist? Are these kids disposable? But at the same time, I saw a man who was showing me something like real courage for the first time in my whole life. It was like seeing somebody who had built a bunker for babies and was defending it with his whole life. And I wanted that. Mm-hmm. Because that's why I made movies when I was a little kid, because mm-hmm. I wanted to be brave. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be courageous. And I wanted to understand what that looked like growing up in a place that seemed like the opposite of that, where people just walked around with broccoli wads of cash, right? Mm-hmm. I wanted to see something heroic happen and something real. And so when I saw this man standing in front of this box, it was like he had drawn a line in the sand and said, no one dies here, mm-hmm. not in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that battlefield was familiar to me because I lived in a neighborhood. I made movies in a neighborhood, and a lot of people don't get to go to Iraq, and they don't go to these places, these exotic foreign places, and thank goodness for them. Mm-hmm. But most people just kind of live these lives in their neighborhoods, and they reach out to people or they don't. And so for me, it was like the LA Times applied to me for the first time in my life. Mm-hmm. And yet this is a story that was 6,000 miles away.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I think we should stop and pause to put in the caveat that it's not like you were reading this article and you're like 54 years old and you're like, what am I going to do with my, no. you know, my retirement years and stuff like that. I mean, were you a student at the time?
I was a student at USC, 21 years old.
Okay. So 21 years old, and which obviously is probably the reason that you had the audacity to start sending some random emails.
Yeah.
Basically pitching the idea that you were going to capture this story on film.
Yeah. Who the heck was I? I don't know.
Yeah. And I don't even think you got like responses initially, and then you got some random like Google translated response back, right?
I did. I actually sent about 12 emails to the pastor, never heard back for a month. And I figured none of them went through because actually all of them got kicked back to my inbox. Huh. To this day, I don't remember ever getting an email through. Hmm. But a month later, I get an email from the pastor himself, and it basically said this in broken English. Dear Brian, this is Pastor Lee. Don't know what it means to make a documentary, but you can come live with me if you want. So my response was, see you soon.
Wow. Okay, so which is so weird, because I mean, you obviously thought when you read this, I mean, I don't think you had, you know, necessarily whatever you thought as far as like, well, to some degree, I'll change the world with this or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're basically just trying to live your life as a college student, make a good, you know, project at some point, wondering how this was going to pan out.
Sure. I mean, and part of me wanted to help these kids, right?
Yeah.
But a bigger part of me wanted to help myself become extremely famous. I mean, mm-hmm. I wanted to go to Sundance Film Festival.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the next Christopher Nolan. Uh-huh. Everybody did in college at film school. And so I thought this was my ticket.
Yeah.
My golden ticket.
Okay. So meanwhile, and you tell this parallel story in the book, you have this friend named Will.
Will Tober, yes.
And Will is apparently attractive. You mentioned that he's not a great actor, but you'd roped him into some projects.
I think I call him beefcakey.
Yeah. That kind of made me uncomfortable when I read that. But that's okay. I kind of just envisioned him in like a tight t-shirt, like
you
running
should,
around.
Yeah,
drumming.
It's the only way to think about okay. it, unfortunately.
That's weird.
Yep.
So I'm kind of wondering like what was going on? What was your relationship with him at this time? And how did that lead up to the day that you decided to pull the trigger and go over to Korea?
Will was the guy who kind of bucked the trend for me with Christians. Mm-hmm. Evangelical Christians, right? Mm-hmm. Ooh. Because for me, evangelicals were people I just didn't trust. I thought they were just ignorant. They were stupid. They were, in a lot of ways, just if they were on a crutch, mm-hmm. which I didn't blame them for because mm-hmm. bad things happen, or they're indoctrinated, brainwashed, whatever, and they were really judgmental and just horrible people. Mm-hmm. But then I met Will, and he claimed to be a Christian, an evangelical Christian, whatever that meant. And yet he was really authentic and kind, and he didn't hide anything. Hmm. And so for me, meeting him was the first time I really felt like I met a Christian, for what I thought a Christian should be, mm-hmm. you know, coming mm-hmm. from the outside in. Mm-hmm. And he changed my opinion And so I started to hang out with him, just spend some time with him. And I like to call him God's will. Mm-hmm. You
know? So what was his place in you making this decision to go over and start filming what would become the Dropbox? What did he think about this? Did he feel, because I mean, I think as an evangelical Christian, I would be like, I don't know that we could put this story in the hands of this Yahoo. I mean, does he even know about Jesus at all?
Totally. I mean that's one of the funniest parts. It's sort of like, but the thing was, I thought I was a Christian mm-hmm. because I watched Fox News with my mom and I didn't smoke cigarettes. I mean, that's all it really takes in Orange County or in America. I mean, let's talk about the American dream. Everyone's a Christian here as long as they do certain things. Mm-hmm. And we've rejected a lot of these terms because they're weird, like born again and all these things. But those things are true and that's actually what it feels like. But mm-hmm. So for me, I thought I was a man of faith. And I think Will probably saw God doing something through somebody that had no idea what they're getting themselves into. And he was kind of going along for the ride. Mm-hmm. But Will and I roomed together our freshman year in college at USC. Mm-hmm. And we'd have conversations every night about random theological concerns that I had about the Bible's reliability, whether Adam had a belly button, or what happened to the guy on a deserted island that never got to go to church. I mean, what happens to him? And Will usually didn't know, but that was okay, because I don't know was a better answer than him parroting something.
Okay. So Will is one thing, but then you show up in South Korea and meet this dude named Pastor Lee.
Pastor Lee.
So tell us, I mean, again, another male figure in your life mm-hmm. who is a Christian.
Yeah.
Let's just try to encapsulate the experience, because obviously there were, you know, multiple trips,
sure.
multiple interactions,
yeah.
lots of different people come into the story. But what was your first impression of Pastor Lee, and what did you really see that was real and unshakable about him?
Yeah, that's a good word, unshakable. It was like walking into Pastor Lee's house was like walking into a forest. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, it was like walking in underneath a bunch of oak trees, you know, like sturdy people. Hmm. And because Pastor Lee had no luxuries, he had none of the things that I leaned on or cared about, any of these creature comforts, and yet he was steadfast and he loved people, and he would sit down and look at you in the eyes like you just come from a trip at sea, and he would really give his attention to you, and he'd care for kids that could offer nothing mm-hmm. to him. Mm-hmm. And I didn't live my life that way. I really only aligned with people that could offer me something that would in some way empower my career or get me to the next step. And so, it was like meeting my opposite. Mm-hmm. Before I went, I thought he might have been some sort of mad baby collector. I mean, I had no idea who this guy was. I mean, how the heck? I had an email and an article in the LA Times, but when I met him, I felt like, okay, so everything else I've experienced, I can put my hand right through it. Mm-hmm. But this guy is something else. He's substantial, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. it's thick, and there's something real about him.
Yeah. I was pretty surprised in watching the film how he appears a lot older than mm-hmm. he is, you know. I think it's just, you know, and some of that's
sure.
probably wisdom, and some of it is just basically what he's chosen to take on.
For sure.
That whole challenge. And so I want to kind of backtrack a little bit here, or maybe this is another parallel little comment I want you to make. And that is, in the midst of all this, and you're kind of pursuing your dreams, and you're seeing this as an opportunity to do something big and whatever, but also in your own life, you had, you know, basically a number of areas of your life that were kind of screwed up. I mean,
sure.
relationships.
Thank you. Good. Somebody's got to say it.
You had some stuff going on.
Yeah.
And you were basically trying to do good things, understand good things, while at the same time maintaining a cover for, mm-hmm. you know, relational messes, you know,
totally.
Behaviors, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were kind of living a double life and trying to all of a sudden emulate and elevate Pastor Lee while at the same time, you know, I think we're all just sitting there like, how can we manage our junk and keep things together?
Wow.
I mean, you know, just as a little segue into you talking about this. Go ahead.
Well, to be candid with you, I mean, I was looking at pornography on the same computer I was editing on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a double life. Mm-hmm. When I met Christians, I felt like I was meeting people who weren't afraid to be known all the way through. Mm-hmm. And it was like meeting children, right, in an orphan world. I mean, that's what it felt like to meet Christians. I felt like I was meeting people who talked about their junk, not because they were proud of it, but because they lived in the light. and they had some power to overcome it, and they had a freedom that I didn't have, because I didn't even want to let anybody know about the things that were inside my heart. Because what people don't say enough in church, which they really need to say, is that who you are inside is just as much who you are as the things you do. Mm-hmm. And if sin is just adultery and murder and Hitler, then there's only a few sinners in this world. But if sin is selfishness and bitterness and all this and lust and all the stuff that happens in your heart, because God looks there, because mm-hmm. he's God, mm-hmm. then we're all in the same bucket. Mm-hmm. And so I was leading a double life. And when I got saved and understood the Father's love for me as a child, I wasn't even capable of leading a double life. I was the same in a crowd, alone, struggling with the same junk, still struggle with different stuff, but I'll talk about it and I'll let God deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And you do in the book, and I think it's very... it is a very honest portrayal of just how, what was going on in your head and how you were reconciling that.
Totally.
Tell us briefly, Brian, about the tipping point. When did it click, coming together, deciding I'm all in, this is real, this is going to really change my life?
Yeah. I was sitting on my futon, my childhood futon, the same one where I had thought a little bit about God and a lot about girls and edited films and wrote films. And it was in my bedroom, you know, the one where I grew up in. And, I was listening to a sermon on that computer, and it had to be that computer, right? And the sermon was called, What Did Jesus Accomplish on the Cross? And before I went on this trip to Korea, I bought a cross necklace on Amazon for $8. And I figured that would help me communicate with a pastor or give me some sort of, you know, rapport with him. But the thing we have to understand, I think people need to understand, is that we've all heard about the cross, and a lot of us heard about the cross in movies or in church, but at some point the cross cannot just be something you buy on Amazon for $8. It has to be what bought you. And when I heard this sermon, this pastor told me for the first time, he said, he quoted this verse from the Bible, and I had no idea where it came from, but he just said, he made him who knew no sin to become sin so that through him you might become the righteousness of God. And if that's confusing to you, all it really means is that Jesus Christ took my place and all the places in my life where I did things that I was ashamed of, and ultimately on the cross where I never had to go as long as I let him go there on my behalf. Mm-hmm. So it was a substitution. It was when it wasn't this coffee cup thing anymore that, hey, Jesus died for your sins, turn or burn, kid. And I was like, I don't have sin. Don't talk to me about that, please, you know? Mm-hmm. But then when this guy said, no, you don't understand, Jesus Christ became you so that you could become him. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was I knew Jesus didn't actually do all the things. Like, he wasn't addicted to pornography. I knew that he didn't scream at this girl that I was emotionally abusing in my life. But I knew that he was punished like he did all those things for me. Mm-hmm. And so that's what broke me to a million pieces. It was like a trial in which he claimed responsibility for all the stuff I did. And I got to go free. Hmm. And, I hated myself at first, and yet at the same time, I was loved because I was known for the first time all the way through, and I don't hate myself anymore.
Hmm. All right, so we know, those of us that are Christians, know that becoming a Christian is not like a country song. You don't get your wife back, your dog back, your truck back, necessarily. In fact, for some people,
it can
make things, especially those that want to traipse their way through Hollywood, it can make things a little bit more tricky.
Totally.
What is some of the typical, as a young adult here, angst that you still have? I mean, I'm sure you still have career aspirations. I'm sure you struggle with your own selfishness, because I do at least one day a year. I mean, I'm just saying, man. You know, all that kind of stuff, still relational stuff. And how are you kind of grappling with that? Do you have guys in your life? I mean, what's going on there?
Yeah. So it's funny. I have... As soon as I got saved, I felt like God immediately surrounded me with family, a new family, a spiritual family. Mm-hmm. I have spiritual parents, Rob and Patrice, and I talk to them on a weekly basis, Rob on Friday nights and Patrice on Sunday afternoons, and I tell them everything that goes on. I have a Barnabas. His name is Wes Fulkerson. We have a prayer call every Monday, and I tell him all my junk, and he tells me all his, and we pray for each other, and we don't commiserate. We actually deal with it, and we trust God's promises to, when we confess stuff, that he's going to deal with it, and he's the only one who can really deal with it all the way to our hearts. I'm in community through church, which is super important. Being around a bunch of guys and just nothing fake, mm-hmm. just being honest and living in the light and having no secrets. I mean, that's the best part. Mm-hmm. And so that's really, really important to me. And I'm surrounded. I have, you know, it's like you have a Paul, a Barnabas, and a Timothy, mm-hmm. right? You have somebody you mentor, somebody you're mentored by, and then somebody who's with you, mm-hmm. shoulder to shoulder.
Hmm. Well, that's awesome. And it's kind of like what we stump with all of our audience, like every day of every week, it seems, here at Boundless. So it's great to see an example of that being lived out practically, mm-hmm. to see that. All right, last question has nothing to do with the rest of this interview. What Great. Is the best movie you saw in the last 5 years?
Ooh.
In addition to yours.
Am I a snob or just like the normal answer? Because well, I have a snobbish answer.
Let's give both answers. Because, okay. Yeah, because I can't deal with the snobbish one. But some people will be way into that.
Yes, my snobbish answer, because it is Monsieur Lazare. It's a Canadian film, a French-Canadian film. Mm-hmm. About a classic.
Well, we do have a bunch of Canadian listeners, so they're going to be excited to hear that.
It's a great film. Okay. It was nominated for an Oscar, I think, 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it's about a class that witnesses a suicide and has to deal with it. Hmm. It's an amazing, authentic movie. And then the other film, which I loved, was a film called Fury. And that came out pretty recently.
Oh, yeah.
And I did not expect to love it. I had no idea. But Shia LaBeouf plays a Christian who isn't a big hypocrite. Mm-hmm. And I think something pretty big happened for him on that set, at least I've heard. Mm-hmm. But he gave a real portrayal of faith in the face of really impossible circumstances and was steadfast. And I wanted to be like that in my faith when I watched it. So I think that film surprised me and it was truthful. Mm. And I'm thankful it exists in the mainstream.
Yeah. So. Very cool. All right, Brian Ivey, thanks so much for the conversation. We've got info on the Dropbox, the film, as well as the book here on our site and over on the blog. So thanks for being part of this.
Thank you, Lisa.